This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's K-Rock, it's Kevin Kenny, and it's MGK.
Hello, everybody.
Thank you for stopping by.
Thank you for having me. A lot of dyed hair in the room.
There's a little I didn't realize it was such a wave until like I came to L.A. and everyone was doing it. I felt unique in New York, but here
unique
it's pretty common.
New York. Unique
That's
New
a good
York.
Catch.
So good. That's the first time I've ever heard it outside of Ron Burgundy actually
yeah.
used
I'm channeling
the same
him,
sentence.
Well, so many congratulations are in order. Let's get them out of the way. Congratulations on back-to-back number one records.
Hey, thank you. That's for the fans right there. They are owed that congratulations, so I will extend it to them. That is yours.
Well, it's got to be theirs, because you were just telling me off air that you wouldn't even celebrate it.
I didn't celebrate this one. I kind of, but it's my birthday, and I think I'm combining the celebration of that album with my birthday, and just, yeah, I mean, I put a lot of pressure on this number one. You know, I kind of over-pressured myself when it, so when it happened, it was almost like surreal, like I didn't know how to take it in. So it's seeping in slowly, and I think once I hit this tour, I'll really have got the full spectrum of like, whoa, we did it. You know, once I hear everybody singing the songs back, that's when it'll set in for me, I think.
Right. Mm-hmm. Is your birthday a special day to you?
I tend to be like one of those guys where it's like, we got to celebrate big, and we'll like celebrate it for 7 days straight. Yeah. Yeah. And then I have friends where their birthdays come and they're like, please don't celebrate.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like such a workhorse that it's like almost like the one day a year that I know I'll just be able to be free of it and just, yeah.
Yeah. Do you like to be by yourself on your birthday? Like, do you like to sort of get, because you're a very spiritual guy.
Yeah, I opposite for me on my birthday, I really, really like to just be, I have a great friend group, so I like to be around all them.
Yeah, uh-huh. Totally. Well, let's take it. Something, it's so funny that I think it's lost in this whole story of this, I mean, just meteoric rise you've had over the past 2 years. I mean, really, to me, like, I feel so close to it from the radio end of things, because I used to be on a station in New York, and we were one of the first stations to play the Youngblood and Travis record.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I remember you guys came in and you performed the song,
yep.
and I feel like that time period in this journey you've been on is a little under talked about. And
it
you know, you
huge
making that,
what
shift,
that song did outside of like us personally living it. Like, I mean, I remember that day very well. That was a huge excitement day. Kind of, we all felt like, oh, we did something. Like, there's gonna be a wave that follows this explosion or whatever. You know, like, it was almost like, you know, like when a volcano erupts underwater and then a tsunami follows. It kind of felt like we knew we were all underwater in the explosion, and we knew there was gonna be like a wave that followed it. And someone from my label said they went to Syracuse to do a talk to the students in the college there. And that all the kids, when they were talking about this new wave of pop punk and all that, that all the kids were bringing up, I think I'm okay. And I agree with you. I almost like focus on tickets more, like tickets to my downfall more than I do, I think I'm okay, not, you know, realizing like, oh yeah, it really started with that one.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, like the internet loves to, and like Stan Twitter loves to use that term, cultural reset. That was like a bona fide fucking cultural reset.
Whoa, cool.
You didn't feel that?
I did. you know, in the song A that I released, there was this line I said, the only comments I read are the bad ones. So I'm guilty of that a lot of times, but I need to, you know, see the fruits when they're there too. And that was one of those ones where it felt, when I Think I'm Okay came out, it still felt like the intimidation of me in the pop punk space wasn't as feared or controversial yet. It was kind of like, oh yeah, everyone was happy with that song. Everyone was like, oh, this is great. This is great for the culture. This is great. And then, you know, as and this happens with everybody when they start to become successful in something, especially in punk rock culture, like you fear the success, and we all have like gatekeeping moments, or like, or you become victim of the gatekeeping moments, and you're like, oh well, you can't be successful and us still like you, so
right.
Yeah, so I Think I'm Okay, it was a very special moment. And even the video, when you watch it, it's so pure, and you can kind of see like the excitement of everyone being like, yeah, this feels like how it's,
yeah,
like what's been missing.
Sandler did that video, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he and I talk all the time, and I always big him up for just like the aesthetic of that. I mean, it really, between you and Travis, man, like you've really authored, you know, whether people like it, whether people don't like it, you guys have unequivocally authored an era in rock. Right, where like not unsimilar to grunge or hair metal or any movement, right? That is, it's such a movement and it's such a pop culture phenomenon that it births like, you know, almost Xeroxes of you guys. I mean, you go to any of these Spotify playlists, it's all descendant of, you know, I Think I'm Okay. It's all descendant of MGK,
man.
You know, from the look to the sound to the producers, you know, that people are wanting to work with.
Yeah, whoa. That's the dream, man. That was always the dream. I always wanted to, because I watched like peers of mine create their own moments where you see like the generations that come after them like want to look like them or make songs like them. And I was the same way. I wanted to make songs like, you know, these people, you know, shit, dude, take Tribe, like Travis. You know, I grew up, it's been documented for many, many years. Like I loved Blink. I was always such a fan of the band. And yeah, I kind of came into my own balance between the hip hop that I grew up loving and that I was making, and which is what influenced kind of the bounce in that Take Us to My Downfall album, which is why genres seem to not really matter with that album. I play it in front of crowds that, you know, only listen to a certain type of music, not being pop punk or punk rock at all, that all vibe with what the bounce is in it. You know, and that was unique to the sound. And then the guitar chords that Blink and Green Day and Paramore and all of them were laying down, because I always wanted to play guitar, and I'd play guitar when I was a lot younger, but the mastery of, you know, intense technical guitaring was never what turned me on about guitar. I was like, dude, I just want to play four chords and put some attitude in it. And so they let me know that it was okay to do that as a kid. And yeah, so I kind of just took all the different ingredients and made my version of that meal.
Where would you say, you know, and I imagine it's before that song comes out at the top of 2019, but where would you say, like, the interest to explore a new sound came from? Because Hotel Diablo, I guess, drops, what, late 2018?
Yeah.
And so, like, that record, to me, that I think that's something historically that'll be really interesting for fans to go back to and, like, listen to as almost like a prequel to what we were about to get over
1,000%.
The past two years. Where did the interest start to come from? Because 2018 is like a crazy year for you. You're in a very high profile situation in the world of hip hop.
Yep.
And then, you know, Hotel Diablo is this exploratory record sonically. And then it leads up to, you know, of course, Youngblood and Travis Barker. But where does like that initial interest stem from at that point in your life?
2010, the first Warped Tour I ever did.
But in terms of course, I mean, that's, you know, that goes without saying.
I mean, that was me being like, oh, I'm around and on stage with all of these acts. And also, you know, I would, there's a fun memory I had, I forgot which Warped it was, but we were playing and We the Kings were also playing, and they would always do Cover the Middle by Jimmy Eat World, and they would always invite me to come up and either play guitar with them on that song or just sing that song. It was kind of like just a very collaborative tour where all the bands were just kind of, everyone had done Warped so much at that point, they're like, all right, well, let's just make this fun. Everyone just crash each other's stage set and let's just all just, you know, mess around. And so obviously the bug was in me very early on. I think when I decided to sonically incorporate that into my album sounds, I had tried on my third album called Bloom, towards the end of that record, there was a song called Let You Go and a song called Rehab and a song called 27, in which I was singing and I was playing the guitar on. And it was almost there. Like, you know, I listened to the records and I'm like, oh, okay, well, if I had done those now, we would have really nailed it. And as far as like getting away from program drums and just actually having, you know, real drums on the record, or, you know, taking away from less Pro Tools guitar rig, guitar tones, and just hooking up some amps and playing it like how we did with a lot of the Ticket sounds. And then, you know, so I guess it would be Travis. When I took I Think I'm Okay, when I took that guitar lick to Travis with this like demo verse chorus and then Youngblood's additional vocals on it, and I was like, Trav, do you think we can make something happen with this? And he was like, say less, like I got it. And then when that happened and I listened to it, I was like, oh, this is what I've been trying to do for years. So I had tested it on the third album, and those songs became really good concert songs for us because it's kind of hard to rap along with me, you know, when it's like,
oh yeah, some of the fat. some of those flows
is hard for, but when I would break it down and I would go it was easy for kids to sing that, and I was turned on by the crowd response of being able to sing every word. So, but Hotel Diablo was a turning point. Like, when I Think I'm Okay was at the end of that record, it was telling people already, like, I think this is where, what the next sound is going to be.
Is that something you think about a lot? It never occurred to me, but you've always been such a great songwriter, but the delivery at times was kind of rapid and furious, and lent to the energy, of course, of MGK Music early on. And then you slowed it down just a little bit, right, mm-hmm. in terms of the rhythm, and then people could finally get to, like, understand the lyrics, and, you know, you know, moms driving around can sing along to Bloody Valentine and whatnot. Is that a big component, you think, to the broader audience you now have?
That, and probably me being a better version of myself, in the sense of not compensating for, like, oh, I'm insecure, so I'm gonna like mask that with like this persona. I think Hotel Diablo, going into Tickets, I was like, I think I'm just gonna be who I am, and it doesn't need any layers on top of it to fend people's opinions off. I think if they don't like me, then they should just not like me for me. And that's okay. So I started to just like be more myself, and that's actually right when I started getting invited to talk on talk shows. You know, it's funny, like, musicians are almost like, if you look at the history of late night or any of those things, like, they bring us in there to perform, but we don't get to hit the couch and talk because they don't have the faith that we're gonna have anything to say. And I think when I was kind of like, oh dude, I'm funny, or I'm like I like to like mess around too, or I have really funny stories and all these things, that was kind of when people were like, yeah dude, you can go from the stage and come sit on this couch and, you know, talk for 5 minutes. And that was like a huge thing, because, you know, a lot of my musician friends are always like, how did you get on the couch? Because we always get to the stage, but they don't let us on the couch. So when people started to kind of see a little bit more of who I actually was, it feels like more people gravitated towards me and my sound.
And they could understand you better.
Mm-hmm.
You've been really outspoken about how the benefits of therapy in your life, and you going to therapy, and just the positivity you've seen out of it. And I got to imagine that sort of goes hand in hand with feeling more like yourself. As an artist, though, you know, obviously, you know, the therapy is an amazing thing. Is there ever a voice in the back of your head that worries that'll impact the art in a way?
Because I'm always so curious. Totally.
Because so much of music, right, and the music that we grew up on that we love, and the music that you make and why it resonates, is it's like this searching, mm-hmm. right? And there's this angst, and there's this, like, you're searching for answers through this art. And therapy is so beautiful because it can provide you so many answers. Yeah. And so I'm just curious, like, if you ever, you know, think about that in terms of the effect it would have on your art inherently.
Yeah, being scared to fully correct yourself so that there's no more, like, pain to talk about definitely scares me. But I think what's scarier is like how self-destructive you can be when you're in that like tormented space and you don't know how to, like, what to do, and there's not always a studio to take it out on, or an audience to go in front of and just like have a cathartic show in front of. So, because COVID took touring away, and I was so used to touring 8 or 9 months out of the year, and I was always kind of like the place where I would take it out on. Ironically, my therapist's office, the sprinklers flooded the whole entire building, so there's not been therapy going on. So,
and you didn't pull the fire alarm.
I might just have to just go back in that studio again before the building is fixed.
Is it tough? You know, you were talking to Stern about finding a therapist, and I think that's such a great thing you talked about, because, you know, when I first went to therapy, it's almost like dating at first.
Oh, totally like dating.
You know what I mean?
Because
you get these people. And then sometimes you ever find like I went to so many therapists and everything was about my dad. And I was like, well, some stuff's about my dad, dude, but not everything in my life is about my dad.
Yeah.
And so it's funny, like, but I would imagine it would be even harder for you because you're a publicly known figure. And so there's sort of like that to take into, you know, a therapy connection or lack thereof. Did you find that?
Yeah, I found that I was really irritated with people who just kept being like, well, tell me how you feel. Tell me how you feel. And I'm like, dude, there's got to be something else to this therapy thing besides like, tell me how you, like, help correct me, dude. Like, if it's just me talking, I can do that with friends. You know, I have friends who will ask me how I feel. So when I started like finding that, okay, what goes in your gut? That's when you're connected to your mom in the stomach and the womb, you're connected through your umbilical cord, which goes into your belly button, which is the core of where all your nutrients and all these things that your mom is inducing, whether it's stress, everything, it's all going, being fed to you through your stomach. So your stomach is the center of where all your nerves and all these emotions and all that stuff is. So what you put in your stomach also comes out. So when I was on tour and I'm just eating Speedway hot dogs and McDonald's and all these things, it's like, well, no wonder I was a shit show and depressed all the time. Like, what's in my gut is terrible. And so when you start to adjust your diet or you but when things like that are pointed out to you and you're like, see how you feel after a month of this with, you know, in your diet, or like, see how you feel if you, are speaking to, you know, I see a lot of my friends, like, they become really religious after a life of like sin.
Right.
And they attach themselves intensely to Jesus or God or a spirit of some sort. And there's that can almost become like an addict thing too, where you're like,
Now
I'm addicted to praying and Jesus and all these things like that. But that's not fixing anything either. But when you do connect to spirit in general, that really became important for me, because, you know, I grew up in a religious household and I always just kind of like it was too overbearing for me to like be like, okay, a guy in a robe with long white hair is judging my life. And I'm like, I didn't attach myself to that. And that was kind of how it was taught to me very traditionally. But when you learn that like the universe is your own blanket that you're weaving, and you can choose what to put in to, like, you can create your own reality. And you can also speak to it. And I was always like a kid fascinated with the stars, right? You always like, you look up and there's so many like wonders up there and so many questions and answers that you can't find until you tap into a certain place. And I think that became an outlet for me too, is to kind of just like speak into the ethos. Like, I watched tickets to my downfall come from thin air as soon as I opened my heart to that, and was like, I had been begging for so long to the universe to like have my own effect on music culture. I was like, I want to be more than just a name in the long list of artists that exist. I want to be one of those names that, like you had said, like starts a cultural reset. I want to be a part of music history. And there are very few artists who are able to have, you know, more than just some plaques and like, oh yeah, he was famous. Like, there's few people that you're like, oh, when this happened, everything changed. Or like, when this happened, all this came after and this came from it. And that was me always looking up to the skies at that time, being like, you know, I want this, and this is what I see, and this is what I see. And they're holding the answers up there, and someone's like, you know what, this vessel is so loud and wants it so bad, like, we're gonna like we're going to give it to that person. And it came to me, and it was like, it was fluid. It was like coming through my head and out of my mouth and into the microphone and all those records. And everything since then has been effortless and feels like it matters.
Yeah.
Same with Hotel Diablo. You know, to be honest, like, there was something about that album that's really special, and it will be revered and reviewed in the future as like, oh, how did we miss this? Because it's a brilliant storytelling piece that I was also, but I was deriving that inspiration from like what was in front of me. Tickets was like out of thin air. I don't know how that. I mean, it trips me out, like how that just like came through. Like a, yeah. I mean, you know, not to get so deep into the spiritual aspect, but that does, like, there is something to say about the magic in opening yourself up to being like the voice of something, or like a vessel for something greater, because it ended up kind of like saving a lot of people's summers. And, you know, after a really dark winter, a dark year in general, you know, like, I watched, it was almost like it came out the perfect time. Like, everyone was alone, but there was this like album that came out that had like, because the fun from the outside world was taken away from us with the pandemic and all that, and then, but there was this album that was like a voice of like, no, here's some fun though, like, just remember what it's like to put to drive around, even if you can't go and talk to anybody or touch anybody or do it, but remember what it's like to just drive in your car and like have some hope, or have some, like, you know, smile, or put your headphones in and feel like something relate, like that feeling was what I had when I was a kid with people's music. And we're so saturated with so many artists and so many songs that, you know, we forgot about albums. That's why I think it's really cool when like Kendrick drops an album. It's like, because you know you're gonna get a full package and it's enjoyable.
Yeah, and thought was put into it.
Yeah.
You know, do you think what's I'm from Jersey and I can't pronounce shit. Ashwagandha. What's the drug you were talking about?
Oh, ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca.
Ashwagandha is a festival in Montreal. That's
okay, hard. Are we playing it? Should I plug it?
I think we are.
We'll say it one more time.
Ayahuasca.
Yeah. What just struck me, and I'm curious, is do you think with the story, the beautiful story that you just told about really looking up at the stars as a kid, or even, you know, as a grown up, and wanting to be this voice and wanting to be this leader for people and this, you know, catalyst for change in music, and that being your true desire, but then so often being judged in your career, or, you know, the world just misunderstanding you. I think misunderstandings are such a throughway throughout your career.
Totally.
Do you think that at all inspired the story that you were talking about in the press of being this pauper, living a lifetime as a pauper, as a beggar on the street, and trying to show this crystal, and people just thinking it's a bull asking for change?
Right. That was a really interesting one. Do I see a throughway between that and what I'm doing now?
Yeah, and just that overall misunderstanding, because you're somebody where, you know, and I want to ask you where you get this strength, but I can't think of another artist that has faced more judgment and unfair judgment than you, whether it was being an outsider in rap, or whether it's this gatekeeping, you know, elder emo bullshit we see online now. Mm-hmm. You know, to have the resolve to not only just tolerate that, but then to create art and be vulnerable just takes a tremendous amount of strength. And so I'm just curious, where does that strength come from?
It fluctuates a lot every day. This morning was one of those days where it was just like, I don't feel like, you know, I knew I had to come, and I'm supposed to be really excited, right, about the album, and I'm supposed to be really excited, like, yeah, we're back working a single again, you know, and it's really hard, man, when it comes in the amounts that it comes at in me to act like it doesn't affect me. And I mostly care about the people that come after me, like, not after me in the sense of trying to berate me. I'm talking about the next generation of kids where, like, they might not have as strong of a foundation of people around them to talk to like I do and vent, and like, so that I don't bring it publicly, and like, you know, because I want to be a symbol of strength to people, but you know, I worry about the kids that are going to come next that, like, maybe don't have that, and they experience what I've had to experience, and they're not strong enough to hold on, because this shit, they'll fucking drive you to not want to be around. You know, like, this, it is difficult to smile through it. It's difficult to have an album that you're super proud of and know that when you give it to the world that they'll find everything that's wrong with it. And same when I'm, you know, I just wrote and directed a movie. It's called Good Morning. Same thing, like, oh,
stealing
man.
Stealing my lines, Kels. I'm supposed to plug the movie.
But the like, when you have these things, like, you know, for our generation, like, I feel like I'm one of the core creators, you know, paving a path in which, again, like I was saying, musicians were always like, oh, you guys go stay on the stage, you don't make it to the couch. But, like, I'm setting a new narrative, like, no, us as musicians are actually intelligent, can hold conversations and have something to say, and we are funny, and we're not just these personas that you see on this stage. And, you know, when you think about entertainment goes beyond music. Like, we're making music videos, we're doing all these, so you should have faith enough in me to direct a movie. And all these things, it was a big deal when, like, you know, Ben Affleck and Matt Damon wrote Good Will Hunting, and I'm sure the studios were like, but who are these two Boston kids to, like, write? And they set a standard, like, ah, like, okay, they're not just actors, they can do this. And so musicians, I'm, like, setting a standard, like, hey, we can have full body tattoos, and we can develop a system where we can cover these up, and I can play this character, and we can do, because I remember going in 10 years ago and people were like, dude, what are we, movie studios are like, what are we going to do with this though? And then I would sit in a chair for 5 hours and I went and played Tommy Lee, and they're like, oh, this transformation's amazing. Like, maybe people like you have a place in our industry. And then, you know, to direct a movie, they were like, oh, we'll buy the script, but we don't want you to direct it. Like, what do you know about directing? And for me to direct a full length feature film that's going in theaters with Madsen, I don't want to have people telling us what we can or can't do. Like, music sets so many trends outside of just music. It affects the way we dress. It affects what, you know, these executives' kids want to grow up and be like or look like or do. And I don't want us to just continue to be like these puppets of entertainment. We have to take the control back or just take control, period, in what entertainment is. And so, you know, I'm a rapper, and I'm a punk rocker, and I also can be funny, and that's what that movie kind of is about. It's like, look how we don't have to just be these, like, caricatures of our the personas that you're used to. Like, we can also be this too, because some of my music friends, like, when we're backstage and we're chilling, like, they're the funniest people I know. And so It's rough to know that, oh, great, I'll put this out, and they'll look past all of the good, and they'll just find the bad. But I'm good with it. All I got to do is make it, and it's fun in the times when it's all happening for people to hate or take away from it. But time is... time is forever, so there, all I care about is that at some point someone looks back and sees what we did. And, like, I really just care more about the kids who are gonna, there's so much love, dude, that, like, we don't put the spotlight on. Like, it's wrong for me to focus on just the hate when it's like we put tickets on sale for a tour and we sell 500,000 tickets in a week.
Crazy.
Or sell out Madison Square Garden in a day. Like, the hate is only a small portion of what we see, even though it's like people are so turned on by drama.
Yeah.
That it's easy for us to get lost in that, like, oh, MGK is so controversial. And, like, yeah, sure. But I had this realization the other day. I was like, wait, why am I so controversial? And I thought about it, and I'm like, oh, because I like to make music?
Yeah,
like, what a weird vendetta to have against someone. Like, you can't make that music. It's like, dude, I'm just doing what I love, man. I don't have a problem being crucified at the cross for that. And I'll take it in order for people to maybe learn a lesson from me that, one, if you just get through it and you can last through it, that there's probably a light at the end of the tunnel. And two, you giving them power by stopping what could end up being something great. Or, dude, if you take it back and look at, you know, the clip of people laughing at me being excited about my music in the Interscope offices while a lot of the employees were like looking at me like, the fuck is he doing? What if I would have let that reaction stop me from putting out Tickets to My Downfall? What if I would have been like, ah, oh, yeah, you see, man, people think it's ridiculous, man. Like, I don't, why would I put this out? Then we would have never had Tickets to My Downfall on that album. And then Downfall's High, that short film that we put out, like, that was so pivotal in all the new music that we're going to get following. And, like, do you know how many people probably get that, you know, we probably have solutions to real world problems that are snubbed out of becoming a reality because someone was like, you sound stupid. You're going to convert plastic into what?
Right.
Like, well, because they listen to that. You're going to save the whole world's water supply. Oh, sure, dude. It's like, fuck, you pointing out all these things that you think is wrong is what's wrong. Like, yeah. You should shut the fuck up and let people just make and create, because you're probably stopping more than just a musician making music he wants to make. You're also probably stopping a lot of kids and disencouraging a lot of kids from helping all of us, because there's a lot of great kids who get bullied. Or I don't even like that word anymore, because people are so numb to that word. Like, there's like kids killing themselves who would have grown up to help the entire world because you didn't like, because your own insecurity was brought out from them existing. It's not okay. So you're doing things that are really just taking away from yourself also. And also, like, so I guess that it's my duty to be strong. Because when I was growing up, I looked at people that were hated on and were so misunderstood that was where I found my comfort. And I was like, oh, well, they're going through this too. That's what I'm doing now. I literally am like, oh my God, well, you know, at least this person 20 years ago went through the same thing. Or like this person, like, you know, when they reached a certain level, like, everyone came down on them, so I gotta just, you know, take from them. So I'm the beacon in our generation for hope through an insane amount of hate and controversy, I guess. Like, you know, all I gotta do is just stay alive through it.
And resilience, right? Yeah. You really want to sum it up. It's like, this dude faced hate in hip hop, he faced hate in rock, and then he persevered above it all with two back-to-back number one albums. It's a good story. Should make it a movie.
It's a great
story. So Good Morning's out on May 20th, and yeah. You and Mod co-directed it, and your build, of course, as Colson Baker.
Mm-hmm.
That's a name that, you know, we're hearing a lot more. Of course, MGK has been in the atmosphere since you debuted a decade or so ago. But you hear about Colson more, especially with your success in the world of film. Is that something, I mean, this might just be like, you know, over importantizing something or intellectualizing something, but do you see a separation between those two things, or is it just kind of like time and place?
Yeah, that's the point of what I was making with, like, when people feel so comfortable to speak on me, a lot of them don't know that I am a vulnerable person with real feelings that you are antagonizing and taking away the human side from. And I'm kind of like, okay, well, that was on me for getting lost in a character. And now it's on me to show you, like, hey, this person has a name, and I don't want you to feel comfortable. Like, what you would say to Machine Gun Kelly, you should feel comfortable saying to the unmasked version of that person. And I don't feel like a lot of people would feel comfortable doing that, because if I knew that, it's like Spider-Man, right? Like, if you take off his mask and you know, get to know Peter Parker, you're like, oh man, the whole world's saying like you're this like masked villain going around, you know, fucking the city up, but Peter Parker's just a kid with a camera who like started all this in a righteous place, like, and it was, you know, that is important to me, because I did get lost in a character, and I found myself. So you should, since the cameras are always rolling, and since that's kind of what fame is, that we're all on this ride together, you should kind of like find who I am as well outside of that character. And if Spider-Man was just all Spider-Man the whole time and you didn't get to know Peter Parker, there might not be as much love for that series. You know, that's kind of that's what's interesting about Batman and all those characters, that was when they take off the mask, you get to know the person behind that. So I think I had a mask on for a long time. I just want people to like see what, and you can keep the same opinion, and you can love me or hate me, and that's all good, but at least keep that same energy when the mask is off too. And if you're comfortable saying all these things to the person with the mask off, and to the person who like, oh well, okay, you don't have all this armor to deflect all these things. I feel like a lot of people are just like, oh well, it doesn't matter, dude. He's like, he's alpha, he's this, he'll be fine if I say this. And it's like, well, nah, that's like, that's part of my suit that I put on. I'm actually, you're punching real flesh, dude. Like, I feel this stuff, like, but it's also weird, speaking of Batman, because like, for the first time ever, I heard my real name in a movie. I've never heard the name Coulson outside of that Avengers police officer named Agent Coulson or whatever, but like in the new Batman, one of the guy's names is Coulson, and he like writes my name on the floor and the red paint and stuff. And
oh, wait, I gotta follow. So you're talking about like the actual Batman,
this
movie.
New Batman.
Okay, because Good Morning has a Batman storyline,
which is great timing. And that's another thing, dude, like it was brought through from me always loving film and growing up. All my like idols were from music or film, right? I didn't have people in my real life that I was like, oh, I want to be like them. I wanted to be like Maverick and Top Gun, or like, who, you know, those are people I wanted to be like. And I like, it was just crazy watching the new Batman and being like, dude, they're using the name. I watched it with my daughter, and we were both, they kept saying Coulson. We were like, what? Because I've never seen that. It's always like Brian or
yeah, of course,
Jake, or like, yeah, you know, like I'd never saw a movie with my real name in it. But yeah, the Good Morning, the plot revolves around like this guy who wakes up and he's an actor, and it's the biggest day of his life, right? He has an audition to become the new Batman. And I wrote it maybe 2 years ago, before we even knew there was going to be a new Batman. So the timing of it couldn't be better, because...
Yeah, here we go.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the song that is, I guess, ending the movie?
Because
he's a friend of the show, Gabriel Black.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, okay, so that song got moved in. Me and Mott actually did an original song for it last minute called Good Morning with the U, just because we were like, is it weird that we're putting a movie out, two musicians directed, that we like didn't do like a theme song at all for
right.
it? So, but yeah, that also was crazy, because when he goes... At the well, it still is in the end of the movie, I guess. But yeah, Batman by Gabriel Black is a song that we licensed for the movie, and it's just so crazy because and the song goes, "I'll be your Batman, baby. Call me if you need saving. Don't let." And it's like a story about a guy going to save his relationship while also trying to become Batman. And I was like, this just is way too serendipitous.
It's crazy.
And it's great because, again, it's like another win for the scene because Gabriel Black's from the scene. And it's like another friend of mine, Femme, had something to do with that song too. So that was, it was cool to kind of just keep it in the scene.
Yeah. And I'm glad you put it like that because, again, like we've talked about all these things you've done, and it's like you've just created like a lane for an entire scene. And it's almost like, you know, like it's, I get a kick out of people that would even think to say anything negative about your rise over the past 2 years, because it's like hating on the headliner. Like, you want to thank the headliner for the house. You know what I mean? And it's like you've created like this space for, I mean, people to get signed, right? Like, this is a very en vogue sound that you and Travis, and I'll group Dom in there too, you know, Youngblood really just spearheaded. So,
well, we'd be much stronger together. I will say that, you know, sometimes I come off defensive or, you know, deflated, because it is a lot for a person to take in. I mean, the amount of negativity that oddly is, you know, found me at the other end of, but it's so much stronger to be together. And I'm actually, and anybody who's had a real conversation with me will tell you, I'm very like kind, open-hearted, welcoming, fun guy to be around, other than when I'm depressed as shit. But I am so like collaborative, and always over the years have been like open-armed and happy to embrace anybody. So, you know, I think if we really, really want the scene to pop the way that it should, and this goes outside of just kids who are making, you know, guitar-based music. This goes for young rappers. This goes for all. This just goes for our generation, period. Like, come together and form Voltron. Otherwise, we're all just individual bots able to get wiped out by a bigger enemy. And that is like, that's it's so important if we want to really make this splash the way we want it, you know, the way that we want.
Yeah.
Like, I don't. We're a lot stronger together, man. I think, like, don't shoot your allies. I'm an ally. I'm not here to, you know, I'm not here to take anything from anybody. It was the opposite. You know, Tickets was my love letter to the scene. For real, because I've been in it for many years, and this was me being like, thank you guys. And I think one or two people took it and went viral being like, but he's saying fuck you guys, and I'm like, what? Like,
yeah,
this started out like this, and then but that's how wars start. That is how wars start. It's you take it back to the times of what, you know, all these stories, and, you know, it's like he say she say shit, and it's like, you know, someone comes back to one king and one kingdom, and he's like, they did this to so and so, and the king's like, what? And then someone goes to the other side and they're like, well, that person did this to one of our guys, and the other king is like, what? And without even knowing why they're going to war, and just based off of a simple gossip,
yeah,
with no investigation of where the root of it really is coming from, two kings that could have just gotten in the room and been best friends are now killing each other, and all that's left is an empty battlefield and nothingness.
Yeah.
And that's what is going to happen if we keep doing this, because what I see is older generations get in the same green rooms with each other and on the same award shows with each other, and they're hugged up, and they have stories together, and they're having fun, and they're like, egos are fully put aside. So, I mean, you know, I'm here to say that my ego has been far removed for a long time from from this stuff, but, you know, I also have no problem being like, fuck you. So, you know.
There you have it, man. And I guess I'll just add on that and I'm sure you'll co-sign this. I think everybody in the scene just needs to listen to Family Feud by Jay-Z as like chapter one, and then we can... Nobody wins when the family feuds.
That's brilliant.
You know
Nobody
what I'm saying?
Wins when the family feuds, for sure.
How'd you get Rodman in the movie?
The most last minute, crazy... had the financials of the movies being like, I had them rent out Van Nuys Airport for a scene where an athlete's supposed to punch the main character, and nothing was, we weren't getting like response. Everyone we were casting, me and Mod were like reaching out to personally, and I kept promising them an athlete, and they kept being like, well who is it, and I just kept lying to them and telling them names, and they weren't getting they were getting really impatient, just being like, dude, we rented out an entire airport for 4 hours, and like there has to be someone there. And I was like, just trust me, someone will be there. And Mod's son has Dennis Rodman tattooed on his arm, and we were down to the wire. Like, I called everybody that I knew and everybody that my friends knew. None of them were available to come shoot the movie. And then I feel like also it was probably a weird call being like, oh, Machine Gun Kelly's shooting a movie. We've never seen a movie that he's ever directed. Like, I don't know if I should show up for this. You know what I mean? I feel like some people were like, oh, yeah, we have an away game. But now that I think back, I'm like, basketball season wasn't even happening. But, we're like in a panic, and it's the day before, and we look down at Mod's arm. He's like, man, I only know one athlete. It's this guy. He's like, I just know musicians. You know what I mean? Like, and I was like, that's it. Like, Dennis Rodman, I can't believe we didn't think of that. And so we called Dennis Rodman, and his voice on the phone was hilarious. Like, oh, and I'm like, what's up, dude? It's Machine Gun Kelly. He's like, what up, superstar? What up? I'm like, dude, we're shooting the scene. Like, would you come punch me in the face? And he's like, I was like, when is it? I'm like, it's tomorrow. He's like, yeah, I'll do it. And he asked, the only way it would come was if we sent a Rolls Royce to pick him up. So we send a Rolls Royce to Orange County, get a call halfway through. The owner's like, Dennis Rodman smoking a cigar in my Rolls Royce. Like, he can't fucking smoke in here. I'm like, you let Dennis Rodman do whatever he wants. You just get him here and we'll fix the cigar shit later. And he gets there. The studio's like, you got Dennis Rodman? And like, I'm acting like the whole month leading up to that I knew. I was like, told you, man, we had someone the whole time.
Like, had it in the bag.
Even on the call sheet, it just says like, athlete.
Right.
2 p.m. You know, it was like I gave them no. This was how the whole movie kind of was. Like every day before we had a cameo, there wouldn't be a actual certainty of anyone showing up. I would be like, YG, dude, we're shooting this scene in like 6 hours. Like we need, and everyone's request was so funny. They no, and this is how I knew they were my friends. Like none of them were like, all right, we'll work this out. I need like, you know, 50,000 and I'll show it. It was just so funny. Like YG was like, what time is it? I'm like, dude, we start shooting at 1 a.m. He's like, psh, all right, say less. Like, just give me, you know, two bottles of Hennessy and I'm there. I'm like, what? Yeah, dude. Like everybody, dude, Trippy, can you come through? Yeah, you know, I just need like a room to smoke. Say let everyone get out the room. This is Trippy, you gotta come. This is a smoking room. And like it was Whitney Cummings. She played like literally one of the main characters in the movie. Okay, because she plays this guy's agent, the one setting up the Batman movie. Do you guys have who's playing the agent? Who's playing the agent? It's like the day before cameras start rolling. I'm like, you know, we got somebody. Had nobody. And Whitney, we had been out to her for 2 weeks, and it felt like a teeter-totter, like where we didn't know which way it was going to sway. Like it was always like, they're going to let us know, they're going to let us know. And then the day before, she loves the script, she's going to come do the movie, came, did the movie, absolutely stole the show. Pete Davidson comes in. This is the funny because we're shooting the whole movie. His day that he's supposed to shoot is the last day of the movie.
Oh, shit.
And everyone was like, is Pete going to flake? Is Pete? And I'm like, dude, he's totally not flaking. He's going to show up, whatever. We had rented out a hotel. So all these things, every time we rented out like the biggest space for something, it was when there was always like the most like uncertain, undependable like situation. And like, yeah, like a week prior, I think, or like 2 days prior, I was on the phone with Pete, and Pete was just like, yeah, dude, I'm just not, you know, feeling like I want to leave my house. And I'm just like, oh, God.
Oh, no. Was he fucking with you or was he serious?
Well, dude, me and him are like, me and him are like, you don't know who you're going to wake up next to if you're like our friend or our partner. You know, you're right. Always like kind of waking up like, all right, what mood is, what MGK are we getting today?
Yeah.
And so like, you know, I was just like, oh God, morning of, you know what I mean? Like, let's see if my boy's going to pull through for me. And he called, he was like, hello. And I was like, oh God, this is for sure the voice of someone who's not coming. And I'm like, what's up, dude? Like, shit, getting ready to head to set. He's like, I just got off my plane. I'll see you in a couple hours.
Oh, hell yeah.
And he showed up and he just, again, stole the show.
What's the story behind his interlude? Like, what is that a recording from on the album?
We had left In-N-Out Burger with my daughter, so that's my daughter's voice in the song too. And he was like, you know, because I told him we should do another interlude for this album. He was like, give me your phone. And he starts voice recording. And we did one actually that I thought was hilarious. And he was like, we can't use that. And my daughter was like, you guys for sure can't use that. Like, I'm so mad he deleted it because I feel like if he would have just played it back on a different day, he would have been like, okay, it's not that bad. It's pretty funny.
What did he think was so bad about it?
I can't say because that's what we did put out. But it was so fucking funny, man. It was so funny. And anyway, he does this other one, which actually worked out perfectly because he was doing it while we were driving down Sunset back from the In-N-Out Burger. And so he's doing it, and we get to a stoplight. And when he gets to the stoplight, he goes, oh, my daughter goes, oh, there's the wall. And then Pete goes, what's this wall? And that's where the interlude starts at. And it's basically this wall on the side of One Oak where it has just like, it's just all these famous people. And it's like, Jay-Z, whoever, just like all these people. And then I'm on there right above Jay-Z smoking the fattest blunt ever. And this poster, this wall billboard thing has been up there for like 3 years.
Oh, years.
It's been up there for so long. And I still don't think they know that that's like a giant blunt in my mouth. But yeah, so that whole thing is just him and my daughter having this conversation of like, what is that wall? He's like, it's a wall of famous people. And I'm like all like embarrassed. I'm like, yeah. He's like, are you on the wall? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, God, LA sucks. Like, and then yeah, it's so funny because he was like, I hate the wall, but I want to be on the wall.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And yeah.
And it's a ride into mainstream sellout, which is, it's just perfect.
Totally. Because, yeah, that worked out really good. We seem to have like a good 3-album run of interludes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Looking ahead, tour's kicking off. You also are dropping the vinyl in May still. Is that the plan?
Yeah, with a bonus song.
What's the bonus song?
It's called More Than Life. It's featuring Glaive.
Oh, wow.
Fucking really cool hyper pop kid. And like,
yeah, of course.
I learned about him a couple years ago through Cole Bennett.
Would you say it's you kind of going over to his world or more him coming to your world in terms of the sound of it?
I'd say it's like, you know when Sonic and Tails run at each other? It's like right when they meet.
Okay.
So it's like he's still red and I'm still blue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like he went Sonic or I went Tails. He just did. Like when his verse comes in, you hear his influence.
Yeah.
Production-wise. And then on my verse, you hear my influence. So
Yeah,
it's kind of it's rad. When I listened to the song the other day, I was like, "Damn, we should have put this on the actual album." But I feel like there's something special about the deluxe because there's 3 other songs on it. The vinyl only has More Than Life, and it actually has a different version of More Than Life because I went in with Travis yesterday to add a bridge, and there is no bridge on the vinyl version. There's actually interesting things about the vinyl version. Like, Die in California is different on the vinyl version. Gunna's verse comes first, and I don't even finish the whole first chorus.
Why is that?
Because this is why I like the vinyl of Mainstream Sellout, because you hear me in the midst of trying to get my thoughts together on what the album should be. But the vinyl cutoff date, because of how long it takes to produce them now, was like, we need it today or you're getting zero vinyls of this album at all. And I was like, okay, we'll give it to them as is. And I think that my fans will find the beauty in being like, oh, this is unique. Listen to how these songs are different than they are on the streaming version.
No, that's super interesting.
So Die in California, I hadn't even sung the full chorus. I'll just let them hear it. But
yeah.
And same with other songs. There's like little things that aren't the same as what it ended up being. Because when you're streaming, you can literally adjust that album up until the night before it has to be released.
Yeah, I mean, look at Kanye.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
But with the vinyl, it's like you have to just, whatever that moment is at that time, it's done and you can't make any changes. So
was it hard getting Gunna on the album just because he'd never done this sound before?
Not at all. We saw each other at the AMAs and he was like, where are you going after this? I was like, the studio. And he was like, say less, I'm coming. And he came and yeah, it was sick. One, he was like, that's Travis's son singing on there. I'm like, no, crazy, right? He's like, that shit's hard. And he like goes in and he was saying, dude, Thug's verse, there's three different versions of his verse. Like, there's one that's a whole completely different verse than the verse that you hear on there. They both were like such a pleasure to work with on that. And then on the version that Thug has on the album is half, the back half is from what he laid to Die in California. And the first half, he let us go into all his old songs that he never released and pieced together parts from verses from songs that never came out.
Oh, that's crazy.
Which is the sickest thing ever, because it like it just speaks to how great he is, that he has so many songs that he literally had a song at the exact tempo in the exact key.
Oh, shit.
Laying around. And he was like, yeah, I could just take from that.
Wow.
And we come by, you know, because me and Trav are really just trying to have fun with this and like push every artist to, you know, Gunna was in there. He stayed in there for, you know, 6 hours with us, just like,
shit.
All right, like, what do you want? And I would be like, oh, what if we said this? Or what if, you know, what if we tried this thing? Dude, it was just, everything was really collaborative and it was like a pleasure to work with everybody on the album. Same with Makeup Sex with Bear. You know, like there was 8 versions. Dude, actually 15 versions of Bear's verse.
Wow.
And he did them all within 30 seconds. He would be like, I'd be like, oh, well, like, can we try it? Like this classic Bear approach. And he would like 15 seconds later, he'd send me a voice note from a speaker. Like, oh, I just laid this. And I'd be like, oh, okay, but what if like this line, like, and 15 seconds later, and I'm like, dude, how are you like freestyling these verses so quickly? But that's crazy. That's how we all write nowadays. Like, none of us write. We all just kind of like speak from our hearts.
You've probably seen Maude in the booth, right?
Yeah,
it's like crazy.
Oh yeah, same thing. We all kind of start around that same thing. That's probably a Juice influence, you know, to be honest. Like, we all probably like Wayne.
Yep.
Wayne is where it like started creeping into our minds, like, oh yeah, you can just kind of like go in and take it line by line
and just loop it. Just loop, yeah. You know what I mean?
And then figure Juice, it out. When you know, because I had been around him watching him go off with no care of like amount of bars or like with what's a hook or whatever. And then when I went on tour with Thug, that was my breaking point, when I was like, you know what, I'm never picking up another pen again. I'm never overthinking anything again. I'm about to just, because I would be in the bus with him every day for hours, and like all he did would be like, he never played a beat and like passed on a beat, even if it was a beat that I was like, well, what are we gonna do with this? Every time he would like lay an idea down on, and I'm like, bro, this motherfucker can like adapt to any, and even if it's like a shitty beat, he'll still, because it's like practice to him. You don't like look at the hoop with the basketball and go, this hoop's not my vibe, I'm gonna go, you know, I'll just wait till I find the right hoop. Bro, you become great by shooting on every single hoop that exists. And I learned that from him. I was like, I'm never passing. I'm never going to a studio session ever again and being like, this wasn't a vibe today.
Yeah.
I'm laying down something.
That's how you build that muscle.
Time.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Totally. So in closing here, these two albums, you know, I don't know if you think of it like this, but I think of them as almost like companion albums. You know what I mean?
They are, for sure.
And I think they're going to be remembered that way. Not to spoil the party that this, you know, you just went number one a week or two ago, but is it too early to ask you, like, where do you want to take things? You know, because there's, you know, I mean, I remember Mod being here last summer and us just talking, oh, I think Kelsey's going to go more into the rap thing. Or, and then you talk to somebody else, I think he's going to go more into like the heavy rock thing. To ask the man himself, like, where would you like to go? Not that anyone's going to hold you to this answer, but I'm just curious, like, where are you? You're doing, look, you're covering System on Stern, like, you know, you're flirting with that a little bit.
Yeah, for myself, I'm going to make a rap album for myself. For no other reason, no point to prove, no chip on my shoulder, like, oh, okay, well, I did that, now I got to show them that. It's just like, if I keep doing things to prove things to people, I'm going to, one, drive myself crazy, and two, not make a great product. Like, I made tickets and mainstream sellout because I wanted to make them. I need to now also make people miss that sound. And I need to also, because tickets and mainstream sellout are companion albums, I don't think making a third that's so close in, that's in sonic audio way, like sonically making a third album is going to be unexciting unless it's missed. So I'm gonna do this tour and I'm gonna step into where I left Hotel Diablo and expound my storytelling as a rapper and find a new innovative sound for the hip hop Machine Gun Kelly. And that's where my excitement is, and that's like where me as a like music archaeologist wants to explore. Like, I did tickets and I did mainstream sellout, and I don't know what that next version of that sound is yet, so I need to like step away and like, until I hear the right tone or the right inspiration for, oh, okay, this is a way to like level this up. Because I knew that tickets was, I knew that a way to improve that or make people excited about that was to come with a different guitar sound, and to come with, you know, even on God Save Me, when we kind of play with the yeah, like just a little, like incorporating things that as hip hop artists we would do with our ad libs and things like that. That was kind of, and with A, like bringing in 808s and like bringing in like merging of worlds.
Vocal samples.
That was fun for me because I knew how we could one up tickets.
Yeah. I'm glad you pointed out the tone, because I think that's, to me, the biggest evolution. The guitar tones on
the new one. And also, we were doing real amps. You know, a lot of those songs, we were like, oh, just line up all these amps, and we're going to like plug them and play and see which ones vibe.
Yeah.
And that's why mainstream has, we mixed it differently. Everything sounds, it sounds like a step up, and that's why it was cool.
Well, look at Paper Cuts.
Totally.
That guitar tone, you can't find that guitar tone on
tickets. Not at all. And that one took a long time. We redid the guitars on that 10 times.
Yeah.
And
you redid the lyrics too.
For sure.
Did you write that for the VMAs?
Yes. I wrote that literally.
And then you liked it.
Literally right before the VMAs. I was like, I'd always do things thinking about like what would surprise the fans? What would surprise the fans? And I knew that if I threw a rap verse in there, that people would be like, dude, shut the fuck up. Like, because I never left. You know, I'm always here.
Who's the them in that song? When you say they wanted them, but they got us. When you wrote that, who are you thinking about?
I think that's kind of like the idealized artist from all the gatekeepers that are giving me shit, or the label, like, you know, I wish this person had done this step. I wish tickets was this person's instead of fucking this guy with the attitude, I'm not codependent. I'm super like self-sufficient, and like that's scary to people because I own my own power, and like I have, and I'm not scared to use my voice, and like them is the people that they can control. Like I wish this would have went to someone that we actually still have the strings on, but I cut all my strings. Like I'll never be controlled again because I went through that period too very early on, and so. You know, damn, I wish it would have been this person, but instead we got this bad motherfucker that we're going to have to fucking always keep our eyes on and go to sleep one eye open around, you know, like that is like, it's like haha jokes on you. Like you wanted this person, but you got me instead. So stay on your toes.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for stopping by, dude.
Hey, man, thanks for the great conversation. That was really cool. Thanks for questions, and I really enjoyed this convo.
Yeah, we'll do this every birthday.
Okay, yeah, good.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.